some respects exciting in different ways, but nonetheless exciting.
Put down your binoculars, ladies and gentlemen. Malcolm has arrived.
You will always have a seat at the table when I am in the White House.
I was talking about making America great again, which is my theme.
The rap.
It's 6:07 on RN Drive. We're wrapping up not just the week, but the year in news with my three guests tonight. I can see them all and I'm making them stand in the studio just to keep their enthusiasm up. Sammy Shah is a comedian, a writer, the host of the ABC podcast Laughing Dead. Hi, Sammy.
Hello.
And also Sabine Wolf. She's a writer and a political commentator, a very good one. Hi, Sabine.
Hello.
And Wendy Tui, a Herald Sun columnist. She also fills in here at the ABC and is generally an all-rounder, really, aren't you?
Oh, so round.
Oh, so round.
I'm so rapt to meet you, Sammy Sharp.
Oh.
When I first heard you on the sister station, 774, I actually rang the producer. Said, whoever this guy is, I love him.
Did you?
Thank
yes,
you very
I
much.
Did.
So by the end of the show, we're going to have a proposal as well. I like this. It's going well,
it's
so
not
well.
Like that
yeah, I
show.
Get it. I get it. I know it's Friday, though. I couldn't help myself. Let's start with some of the really big stories of the year. There was a real turn in politics globally. I don't know anyone who's disputed this. A rise in populism that we first saw in the Brexit vote. Why did we continue to underestimate the anti-establishment vote all this year, Sabine?
I think it's because the establishment are so good at putting themselves out as exactly the establishment, right? So, but, you know, for me, and I'm going to, I admit I called Brexit wrong, I called Trump wrong, I called everything wrong, but hindsight is 2020. And if you look back a little further, if you look back to, say, Obama, right, like that was also a very anti-establishment reaction. But what you've got now is that the kind of hopey, changey anti-establishment thing didn't work out. So now we've sort of shifted to fear. The issue for the establishment is how to win all those people back. But don't just concentrate on what happened this year. It's you actually need to look back a good 8 years into the past.
So, Sammy, is that right? That actually our we've diagnosed this as a new anti-establishment thing, but it's not. It's not new. I mean, I kind of see what you mean. Something.
Yeah, it's been trending towards this for a while. And look, there's a few things at play here. One is the fact that Obama was a precursor to Trump, you know, because he didn't come in as a machine, as part of the political machine. Hillary was part of that political machine in 2008 and then lost because of that. So there was already the drive towards that. I also don't think buy into the whole narrative of like, now the world is turning right and it used to be left, because the left didn't exactly rule the world when Obama was there, and the right won't rule the world when it's the same. It'll just continue. We'll all just get along and try to make things work. And
also, yeah. You know, what is left and right? I mean,
everyone
the
has
way
mixes
the way
in them.
Exactly
yeah.
like yeah. the way I conceive of kind of, you know, traditional right wing politics, that sort of neoliberal consensus and stuff like that. I mean, that's exactly what Trump's rebelling against. So I think it's much better to characterize it as a populist turn rather than
that's
a right wing
yeah,
or
yeah.
left wing.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. President-elect Donald Trump's rise was another example of this trend at play, which we're talking about.
Of course, if you listen to the pundits, we weren't expected to win too much, and now we're winning, winning, winning.
Winning, winning, winning. He loves to win, Wendy.
He's hashtag winning.
He's hashtag winning. And well, he has. He's got a hand to the guy. He's won well.
If you hung around below the line on News Limited websites where I go because I think I need to know what they're talking about, even if it makes my eyes bleed regularly, you weren't as surprised. Mm. I was actually not surprised at all. I was more surprised on election day to hear so much confidence that Hillary was going to win. And when it all came tumbling down, you know, I was not at all surprised. And I think we're all guilty of this, and I've just followed a whole lot of people I never would have followed when I first went on Twitter. We are guilty of echo chamber and confirmation bias in how we gather our own information. So if you're only hanging around, even Google does it, as we know, Facebook does it. They give you what they think you want to know and what you already think. And I reckon that lured a lot of people. That's a really prevailing force now. It lured a lot of people to think everybody thinks like I think. But the forgotten people, you know, I know that's become a kind of almost like a cliche or a bumper sticker, but really they're in all different situations in Western countries. And, you know, that's why we've got Pauline Hanson. So they have to be taken really seriously.
Sabine, you were at the Republican National Convention earlier in this year where you bought me the Donald Trump hat. Thank you.
Which
the
is cap. Less funny now, I'm betting.
Where was it made?
Make America Great Again.
It is actually made
wore
in China.
It once just for comedy, and people don't find it that funny. I found at the park when you're with your children. People think there's something, you're just trolling them.
In Melbourne, yeah.
I know. What's wrong with people? Did they have any sense at that time at the convention that Donald Trump could win without changing his strategy?
Well, it was really weird because we were there and, you know, Donald Trump's doing the whole, we're going to win so big. And, you know, I'm sitting around with a bunch of other political insiders going, cough a load of this bloke. But, you know, the Republican Party at the time, they were meeting in back rooms discussing what they would do about their party post-Trump. So I don't think at that time, certainly, they were expecting it at all. But I think Wendy's absolutely right. We do tend to fall into these kind of preconceived narratives that are reinforced by all of the people around us. And it's the thing that's really interested me is tracking how the Hillary campaign has used a lot of the kind of micro-targeting data stuff that Obama used so well. But they've gotten so into that micro-message targeting that they've actually forgotten to have a broader overarching message. And I think that that's a real problem. Like, people are wise to what you're trying to do and they can see that, you know, it's entirely a cynical exercise. I mean, they know when Woolworths does it, for example, so they're going to know when you're doing it too.
So on to
there was that thing where it now sounds like the Republicans have won, but actually people were voting for Trump against the Republican Party, the Republican voters. It was a protest vote against the Republican Party. Then it became a protest vote against the Democratic Party once he took over that. So it was a rejection of the Democrats and the Republicans. If there'd been a far, you know, completely out of the field character on the Democratic side, he or she might have had a much better experience against Trump than Hillary did.
And Bernie Sanders did a lot better than
absolutely.
People expected.
Yeah.
And
for
I think
that
that's testament to that.
Yeah, I agree that it's not such a clear-cut case of left and right. Let's move to the Australian election, which happened in the middle of the year, was a big deal here.
A lot of people forgot that.
Well, it was kind of, but if you look at what happened here, if we can stick to this theme, this broader narrative of populism, we also saw a populist kind of backlash here. One Nation, the Nick Xenophon team, all did well at the election. Are they part of the same trend, Wendy?
Yeah, well, I mean, I am not a political analyst or specialist. So,
but you kind of are.
Yeah, well, I just, you know,
sort of.
I read a bit. And yes, I would say absolutely. And I think we need to take Pauline Hanson very seriously. And I think there's a huge groundswell behind her. And let me just say that when I wrote something about some of the men's rights activists who championed her and whose cause she's taking up by wanting to dismantle the family court, I have never been trolled so hard and so in such great numbers and so viciously. So, yes, it's a strong thing. It's going on. It needs to be watched, taken seriously, and sniggering is completely silly now.
But it's ridiculous to these people are voting. These people don't get elected on their own. Someone's casting a vote.
And Pauline Hanson knows exactly what she's doing, right? If you look at the language of her tweets, and she uses social media incredibly effectively, I think, and there was quite a good article about this by Shari Markson the other week. She knows exactly what she's doing, Pauline Hanson. Her language is exactly the same as Donald Trump's.
Yeah.
And you know, she is incredibly clever. And I saw her share that article that Markson wrote. And it was just such a knowing nod and wink to the political establishment. Like, yeah, actually, I do know what I'm doing here. And if you're concerned about that, if you are in any way concerned about the values that she represents, it is incumbent on you to actually pay attention to what she's doing.
Totally right.
In May, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull made this decision.
The Governor General has accepted my advice to dissolve both Houses of Parliament, effective tomorrow morning, and call an election for both houses, a double dissolution, on the 2nd of July.
You'll remember that, and then the 8-week campaign. Woo! We're wrapping up the Newsweek. Sammy Shah's in here, Sabine Wolfe, and also Wendy Tui. 0418-226-576 is the number if you want to contribute to what you see as the big stories of the year and how you analyse all of this. Sammy, how's the year worked out for Malcolm Turnbull?
I think not as great as he thought it would, but pretty much on par with what everyone else seems to have expected. I think it's just that thing where he came in as a savior of the Liberal Party, much in the same way that Kevin Rudd seemed to have positioned himself back when he took over from Julie Gillard, and And it just is that point where when he first took over from Tony Abbott, a lot of people gave him the benefit of the doubt, saying, well, he's just taken over. You know, you never judge someone on their first term. You always judge them on the second term. He's about 3/4 of the way through a term. I don't know whether it's a first or second at this point. It's a term. In Australian politics, it's kind of hard to make those.
Between two terms.
Yeah, it's very hard to make those kind of judgments. But yeah, there has to be that thing where at some point your greatest achievement cannot be just holding on to the seat of the prime minister. It needs to be being a prime minister. And he hasn't transitioned from, you know, the former to the latter or vice versa.
That's right. Well, he did take a gamble, but he did win the election. And he says this often, and he did. I mean, it might not be a thumping win, but it was a one-seat majority.
But it should have been a thumping win. That's the point. And it should have been a thumping win because the odds were entirely in his favor at that point. There was no reason for it not to have been a thumping win. And since then, he should be more aggressive with a mandate. I don't know which mandate, but any mandate would do at this point.
You agree?
I think you're right. It should have been a thumping win, and it wasn't. And so many people, including young, brainy people with education, said, oh, I'm just disillusioned with a lot of them. Oh, I'm sick of politics and politicians. You know, I'm going to burn my vote. Like, what the heck is that about? There's so much of that around.
I can understand why people are disillusioned, though.
No, like, it's
frustrating to see people, you know, not take advantage of their democratic rights. But I understand the disillusionment because, I mean, I look back on that 8-week campaign and I really cannot think of an overarching message that Malcolm was selling us. And I look back on the last few months.
National economic plan.
I think there was something about an innovation agenda. Yeah, but I just don't know how any of those things actually relate. And, you know, for all the people who were disillusioned and didn't want to vote in that election, well, I reckon they're probably only more disillusioned now. I was sitting around last night and I was thinking about this very issue, and it really struck me how that incredibly bad decision to go to the polls has kind of bled through to him only having a one-seat majority and to him being absolutely hamstrung, and, you know, the rise of people like George Christensen as a massive factor and Corey Bernardi and you know, his utter inability to deliver on any agenda. It's just been this massive rolling ball for him that's gotten worse and worse and worse.
2017. I reckon, I'm going to put my own view forward, but I reckon they're going to need a much stronger economic narrative. I think if they can nail the economic story, then they could possibly turn it around. But I can't see it yet. It's got to be more than a national job. It's got to be more than company tax cuts.
I think it's the year of the zombie apocalypse. So I don't think it matters. I think it's already irrelevant after this.
All right, I like that.
It's good. No, I'm
are you with me on the economic narrative?
No, I am. And, you know, I've said this on a couple of platforms now, so I'm going to say it again. I do think that if there is a second contraction next quarter and that we are in a recession, Malcolm Turnbull will not be the Prime Minister for very much longer.
Yeah, who will be, though?
I have no idea, but I don't think it'll be him.
Okay, but it's got to be someone who has something to offer. Would they return to Tony Abbott?
Oh, that's such an interesting question. I don't think they would, but it's funny that it's been very opaque, hasn't it, when people are asked about, including Tony Abbott himself. So it's not a boring time, and it won't be a boring year in Australian politics. I reckon Shorten did a lot better than people thought he would.
Agreed.
And that was really interesting to watch during the campaign as well. And, yeah, so it'll be a good – it's already – they've gone out at the end of the year still punching really hard, which is interesting because often things settle down a bit. But I was hearing some Shorten quotes yesterday on the radio and it's still full-on fight mode. So I think the break will be brief and we'll be straight back into the thick of it.
It's a bit of Fight Club. And let's not forget, it's like I know everyone's winding down and right now people are at Christmas parties, I bet. And I know some people are driving to Christmas parties or listening to us. Do it. Stream us. But either way – they're still my EFO on Monday.
Exactly, which they've left incredibly late, of course. I was chatting to a guy in my office about this and he's like, I'm surprised they didn't leave it to the 23rd. And I couldn't disagree with him on that. He had a valid, if cynical, point. What is my FO really going to tell us, though? What we already know, that the budget is worse, the budget position is worse. It's all doom and gloom. And I don't see that there will be anything substantial in terms of ideas from Morrison and Turnbull on how to fix it.
So, but if we do lose by at least one of the ratings agencies, our AAA credit rating, I mean, given Malcolm Turnbull took over on the promise of economic leadership, it was his edge over Abbott.
Yeah, but
how does he spin that?
Which voter at this point believes in a politician's promise during an election. I'm always amazed when I find someone like that, because I'm like, oh, you're a rare unicorn. You're a precious creature. Everyone knows what a politician says to get elected is very different from what they do post-election or are capable of even. I don't think people would be surprised or disappointed if it happened. I do think, yes, it'll hurt him next, you know, in the next 6 months, we might see a different prime minister again. Although there's exhaustion with that as well. But people just might say, like, I'm just going to ride it out until the end of it. Yeah, I've one thing I've learned as of 2016, I'm never making predictions again.
Yeah.
So I'm sticking with zombie apocalypse on this one.
Are you there too? No more predictions?
Oh, well, I mean, I didn't call this election right in my head. I thought it would go. I did think Malcolm Turnbull would win by a much larger margin. And I also thought people would have a lot more confidence, to be, you know, greater consumer confidence, and we would be in a bit of a, you know, a bullish stage economically, because we have this wonderful financial wizard in charge of our government.
Wizard.
Well, he is, really, isn't he? You know, yeah.
The wizard.
He's a master of the universe, baby. And, you know, just
he invented the internet.
Down at the bottom of the universe, we're just not feeling much mastery, that's all.
All right, we're wrapping up a very big news year. Wendy Tui is a Herald Sun columnist, Sabine Wolf, a writer and political commentator, and Sammy Shah, a comedian writer and the host of the ABC podcast Laughing Dead. If you haven't subscribed to it, it's good summer listening. Let's move to something that's actually a bit dark, but I'm sure we have to talk about all things, and that is the shocking footage shown on Four Corners of the treatment of young prisoners in Dondale. It was really one of the biggest stories of the year. There's no doubt about it. Those images went across the world. The Prime Minister called a royal commission the next morning on the ABC program AM on radio. I mean, I've been around a while. I'm obsessed with politics. You don't see that very often, where a Prime Minister calls into a radio show like that and declares that there'll be a royal commission. Usually there's argy-bargy about them for months. Sammy, how dominant has this story or this narrative, this Indigenous incarceration story, become this year?
It was our Gitmo moment. It was that kind of a thing where it was, the stories have been coming out for ages. It's not like this is the first time this story has come out. It's been out for ages. Different newspapers have covered it in the last 4 years. But the pictures, and it just comes down to that thing. You need the pictures, and the pictures were so stark and so harsh. Even then, though, it's not as if all of Australia, for example, is united in disgust or anger or those things. There is still divisions. People, some people think it was legitimate treatment. Others think it was abhorrent treatment.
I had Warren Mundine on the other night saying, you know, this kid was spitting, and there are issues
that
around that.
Really interesting, particularly among perhaps more conservative commentators, this demonisation of the children involved. And, you know, to me, like, that takes balls to say that actually this person whose human rights have absolutely and incontrovertibly been infringed here.
A child's
rights.
Let's not forget that part. Exactly.
Yes, a child's rights have been infringed. For you know, some of these people to turn around and say, oh, well, you know, they kind of deserved it. That has been quite disgusting,
yeah,
I think.
That's been a prevailing mood, though, in 2016 in public commentary. Just very, very harsh takes on the victim being the problem. I mean, that's why the Bill Leak cartoon took so many people, you know, put so many people off guard, because really the victim was demonised, the little kid and the father. Whatever you think, I think it was highly provocative, and it summed up how the mood this year really has been, oh, well, just man up, take responsibility, you know, broken child.
But it's kind
of, you brought this on yourself.
It's also that kind of, you know, you're either with us or against us. And it's just become, you know, we joke about the culture wars all the time, but the culture wars have become hyper, hyper, hyper partisan now. There is no nuance or room to kind of think, oh, hang on, maybe there's actually a different side here. It's kind of my way or the highway. And I do think that in 2016, that attitude has gotten much, much worse.
I feel like it has too, actually.
I don't know. I think it's been here this harsh all along. It was just, it was looking somewhere else the entire time. For me, my personal issue that is the one that I focus on is the refugee rights issue, and I spend a lot of time dealing with that and working in that. And the Nauru files, for example, should have been a bombshell in Australia, but they weren't. Dondale was, but the repercussions of Dondale have not had the effect that they, in theory, should. And for me, that wasn't a surprise, because I've seen the kind of victim blaming when it comes to refugees and asylum seekers for so long now that this seemed to very much fit the pattern. None of my Aboriginal friends were surprised with the backlash against the Don Dale prisoners or the young people who were in those prisons.
Yeah, but you can say that. But here we had, if we can try and focus on the other side, mm-hmm. the Prime Minister of the country clearly feeling what he thought was the mood, and deciding that it deserved a royal commission and that it was outrageous. So this is like the most powerful guy in the country making that call. What does that say? I mean, clearly there is a view that perhaps this isn't right.
Yeah, but that's true. But, you know, the Northern Territory Justice Minister thought he could keep his job.
Mm-hmm.
He thought and everyone then they were would voted be fine out. With him. Well, yeah, but he
and then they lost the election.
He made that call. I kept thinking, well, he'll go today. Yeah. He'll go today. Surely. He'll go tomorrow. And no, he thought, oh, you know, I'll be able to stay in my job after this. So he judged the public mood to be tolerating that.
And you know, I do wonder about that because it was such an odd situation where you had them saying, how dare the feds come in and intervene in Northern Territory? It's like, well, that's kind of what happens. And I don't know, like, but did he judge the mood correctly? It's hard to say because there was so much else going on
in that Northern Territory chamber.
But yeah, is that there's so much else going on in that Northern Territory election that it's kind of hard to say.
Yeah, you couldn't. It was certainly not just this one issue. I'm just going to get to some of people's texts because I'm getting a lot of them and I don't want to not share them given people are contributing a lot on a Friday night. Clearly, you're not all just drunk at parties and I'm very impressed. I like this.
Or you're
like
at the party and drunk but bored.
Secretly listening to RN Drive. You can't possibly think Pauline Hanson herself is the brains behind her strategy. Tweets and social media posts, it's entirely Malcolm Roberts and James Ashby. Pauline is still the puppet mouthpiece. There you go. There's one perspective.
But if you saw that clip she did outside Parliament House where she was saying, yay, g'day, Donald Trump's won. And
yeah.
I've got all these legends here celebrating. And she'd had some random American, I don't even know where she got him from. Anyway.
There's Americans everywhere.
But the thing is, that was her. That was she carried off quite a script. If she's really got a hand up the back of her dress, well, you know, it wasn't visible because she seemed to be carrying off that little cameo. And it was actually quite a good performance.
Yeah, I think we underestimate her because she's been around for so long. And dare I say it, because she's a woman.
Not that. It's because we're used to seeing Pauline Pants Down do very funny things and
that
we don't take her seriously. But times have changed since you could just laugh her away.
And also the prism, this left-right narrow prism doesn't describe what's going on here because Pauline Hanson is now, you know, talking about paying your fair share of tax.
Which is the Bill Shorten campaign.
Correct. And if you're going to sort of, you know, go to political school 101, you'd put it on the left column, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
That idea of paying your right taxes and multinationals. So left-right prism, it doesn't work anymore.
It's the same thing, and I hate to take it back to Trump because we're trying to move past that, but when he published his list of 100 things I'll do in the first week or first 10 days, half of those things, a lot of my friends were looking at that and I was like, I don't disagree with some of these. I mean, if you're on the left or right of the spectrum, there's huge areas of overlap, and those areas of overlap are more corporate control, you know, corporations paying taxes, multinational issues, those things. And I think she's tapped into that. And the reason being, she knows media. She may not be as media savvy in terms of, you know, good oratory, for example, as Bill Shorten or someone, but she knows how to speak to camera.
Yep.
She knows how to tweet openly and honestly.
I don't think any of them are very good at oratory.
No,
yeah, it's very disappointing. By
you know,
the way.
She
yeah.
at least knows her audience, which is more than I can say for any of the others at the moment.
I've got this one too. I'm surprised that a program discussing Trump, Brexit and Hanson hasn't mentioned the core issue behind what you're calling populism. It's increasing inequality. The massive growth in GDP in Western countries over the last four decades have gone mainly, effectively, this person is saying, to the rich. So,
yeah. Yeah, it is.
Is that it?
Totally agree.
It's part of it.
It's part of it.
It's not all of it, but it's part of it.
And, you know, like for those of us who may be more inclined to say actually global trade is good, like there definitely hasn't been the The effort made to explain how the benefits actually filter down. Like, it's very
easy. Yeah,
the
people of Geelong.
Yeah, you know, it's very easy really to sit there and say, well, I've lost my job, so, you know, what are you going to do for me?
Now, I want to get recommendations from all of you before we run out of time, but first, just quickly, because it's been a big year for celebrity deaths, David Bowie, Alan Rickman, Patty Duke, Prince, Muhammad Ali, Gene Wilder, Leonard Cohen. People are sad at the end of this year.
Oh, yeah. It's just John Glenn, the astronaut, particularly choked up about that myself.
That's so cute.
It is.
I like that you've chosen an astronaut to be sad about.
He was like, he was very old, but, you know, also. And it's hard to. We are living in a time when there are kind of quite a lot of significant figures who are now quite old, and they also, you know, happen to come to prominence in a time when TV and etc. celebrity culture was sort of taking off. So, you know, I think we can expect this trend to continue. But with a lot of people being not particularly happy with 2016, more than you usually get whinging about how terrible the year was, it does seem like it's been a pretty bad year for celebrity.
It has been
deaths.
A sad year.
Yeah, my own personal one was a very obscure one. I'm not trying to be a hipster here. It's just I'm a comic book
geek.
You are. I am, basically. I'm a comic book geek, and for me, Steve Dillon was an artist who drew some of my favorite comics, and he died. And it was the same thing again, where it's like, really, another one? And it just kind of, to become that.
Well, on the pop culture side, I think the viral sensation of the year for sheer horror and people recoiling at the injustice of it was Harambe, the gorilla, getting shot.
I'm not correcting your pronunciation. I'm saying, oh, my God, it was the worst.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But look, on a deadly serious note, it's quite amazing that it's taken this long until it really feels like the last week for people to get significantly passionate about kids and stranded people in Aleppo. I'm amazed that that's just
I've
grumbled
got so
on.
So many texts about that. Sorry, I haven't got to all your text people, but yes, saying
I can't
that.
Believe it. That it's taken this long, right till the end of the year, and the suffering, the size of the suffering, the dimensions of the cruelty has been, look, you know, at fever pitch, at peak, crisis pitch all year. And we have been more upset about a gorilla, and I was upset about him too, but seriously.
Yeah, you're right. All right, a minute each to these. I'll start with you, Sabine. Recommendations, something you're into, watching, reading, doing.
Oh, there's a really good podcast at the moment called My Favourite Murder, and it talks about murders and how they transpired. And look, it's really quite good, and it's a little bit dark, but it's also great. So
Garen Kilgariff, and is that the one?
Yes,
it's that's that right. One. It's a great one.
It's actually really good.
Have you been binge listening to it?
I have been listening to it a little bit, just on the tram on the way in. And they're kind of, you know, some of them are half an hour long, some are a bit longer, and it's good. There's something in it for everybody, I believe. And I think there are a lot of people who are secret crime buffs.
Oh, totally. Hello.
Yes, yep. We all are. Everyone.
Sammy?
Echo Chamber.
Yep. Yeah. My favorite one from this year would have to be Horace and Pete, which was Louis C.K., the comedian, American comedian. He just one day released this show on his website, and it was basically, it had an amazing cast, and it was just these beautiful, poetic, like very dark, honest stories, like a continuing 7-part story. And it's all for download online. And honestly, it's the most I don't know how to describe it other than to say it's the most accurate slice of Americana I've seen in pop culture or fiction in a long time. And it's just beautifully done. I can't recommend it enough.
All right, Wendy?
I got obsessed with Stranger Things on Netflix.
Oh, God, yes.
I just could not believe that ended. I was so, just confused, upset. I had all the feels.
All the feels.
I had all the feels.
Were you like binge kind of crazy, neglecting your children?
Totally.
That's what I do.
Right.
I'm like, sorry, mummy's watching a show.
Personal hygiene goes to the wolves. Children can be raised by wolves. Mummy's watching Stranger Things.
And freaking the kids out. Like mine say, I heard that was a scary show. I'm like, block your ears.
It was quite scary. And I'm not usually that sci-fi, but God, it was good. And Winona Ryder, so awesome.
I know.
Remarkable.
Yeah.
If you haven't watched it, quick, cancel your Christmas party.
Okay, I know, right? Well, can I just add mine? Not that you asked me, but hey, I'm going to invite myself to say something. Mine is Westworld. Any of you doing that?
No. I'm avoiding spoilers judiciously right
okay,
now.
Okay, I'm not it saying it brilliant.
Okay, fine. I've heard everything about it, but haven't been able to fit it into my watching schedule.
Mm. Guys, you've been awesome guests throughout the year and also tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tonight, Sammy Shah, comedian, writer, host of the ABC podcast Laughing Dead, Sabine Wolf, writer and political commentator, and Wendy Tui, Herald Sun columnist. You're listening to RN Drive. I'm Patricia Karvelas on your radio tonight. and then back in January till 7:30 every single weeknight.